This session we'll be discussing three verses, 20, 21, 22, that are on the same theme. And as you see, the theme, Chintu Veda Veda Tattva. There's emphasis on the Abheda. Later verses will give emphasis to the Veda aspect. Abheda means non-difference. So the absolute truth has a relationship of difference and non-difference from all things. That's a term that Jiva Goswami coined or originated to describe Lord Chaitanya's teachings, which are the Bhagavatam's teachings, which is being revealed here by Prahlad Maharaj. So emphasis upon the Abheda feature. And on the basis of that Abheda feature, we find an aspect of the absolute truth that reaches the conclusion there's only one shelter. That's the absolute truth. And taking shelter of that which is the source of everything is the means to go beyond the crushing wheel of time. So in the previous sections, the immediate previous section was overcoming the miseries of material existence. And there's only one way, devotional service. Adjustments and other methods, limited, impermanent, ineffective. There's only one effective, permanent solution, bhakti. So Prahlad is appealing for that mercy from Lord Nrisingadev. Instructions in the ways of bhakti. And prior to that, there was this humble expression of Prahlad Maharaj's lack of qualification, his disqualification. But the power of bhakti is that one can overcome that disqualification and the modes of nature and become qualified to offer prayers. And we heard that by so doing, the Lord doesn't need this. The devotee becomes decorated with good qualities instead of having the shortcoming, bad qualities and lack of qualification. So now we're going to hear this section that continues, but the crushing wheel of time or the crushing wheel of samsara. So this is an important time. We'll hear several representations on this, but it starts here in this section. But the role of time in material existence, and to get free from the crushing wheel of time, one can go beyond time into timelessness, eternal time. Using Prabhupada's phrase, in the spiritual world, time is conspicuous by its absence. It's really a nice saying. Time means time as we know it, past, present, and future. Crushing wheel of time is conspicuous by its absence. Things don't come into being, and therefore things don't get destroyed. In Bhagavad Gita we hear, for everything, wherever there's birth, there's death. For things that come into being, creation, modes of passion, there's maintenance for some time and then destruction. So beyond the modes means timelessness. And to go beyond the crushing wheel of time, bhakti. It's another approach besides my limitations, besides misery. Now it's beyond time. The destructive force of time. Time we know destroys things. Time also brings things into being. Without the time energy, there isn't creation. And time, under the direction of Vishnu, who is the director of material nature, that moves time, material nature moves by the force of time, he maintains. Time has a non-different feature from the Supreme Lord, even time as we know it. Past, present, future. So let's go quickly in preview over the three verses, 20, 21, 22. 20 outlines non-difference. He makes a list of things, this, that, the other thing, the other thing, the other thing, all have a relationship of non-difference from you. And since all things have the relationship of non-difference with you, then text 21, these are manifestations of Maya, your energy, and to overcome Maya or your energy, there's only one solution. You're the source of all those things. There's only one solution, devotion and shelter in you. Shelter at your lotus feet, which you was asking for before, but now it's the perspective is different. It's getting into something that's going to come later also, that is the features of creation. Just like in Brahma's prayers, Canto 10, Chapter 14. Of course, he's the creator, and he knows all about creation. But Prahlad isn't the creator. He knows all about creation. And behind creation is the absolute truth. And so the creation coming from the absolute truth has a relationship of oneness. Therefore, this crushing wheel of time that is moving material nature, I need shelter from the crushing wheel of birth and death in this feature of time, and that's shelter in your devotional service. He's a bhakti fan. He likes devotional service. And he has Brahma again. He knows why, and he knows also what and how. So he's in the form of prayer, he's giving us this picture of how samsara works and how freedom from samsara works. And then comes this, the last verse, the same phrase. Liberation, or in svarupena, svarupena vyavastati. The ultimate liberation is what the Supreme Lord can give through the agency of bhakti, and it's not available otherwise. By any other means, it's not available. So he is wanting that. The activities in the liberated state in his spiritual identity, svarupena vyavastati. He repeats, the only way to get release from this nishpidyamanam, crushing wheel of kala, is prapanam, surrender to you. I'm surrendered to you. Now, it's not a liberationist idea. Let me out of here. This place is crazy. It's a devotional idea. I want to be in my spiritual identity, and the crushing wheel of time is an impetus. So let us also then, however many minutes, days, weeks, months, or years we have of vitality in this body, let us use that time rather than being crushed by time in devotional service to Krishna. He's teaching us how we should cultivate to become like in the position he's in. here's verse 20, text 20. Whoops. Yeah. He makes a statement. Everyone and everything in this material world is influenced by your energy, because everything is your energy. So primarily kala, that time energy, but then time energy moves his material energy. And he lists different things. They're manifestation of your energy. And then the conclusion, this last line, because the energy and the energetic are identical, then all are manifestations of you. This is the abheda aspect of the absolute truth. So here's the translation for text 20. My dear Lord, everyone, later it's everything, everyone in this material world is under the modes of material nature, being influenced by goodness, passion, and ignorance. Everyone, from the greatest personality, Lord Brahma, down to the small ant, work under the influence of these modes. Therefore, everyone in this material world is influenced. Is influenced by your energy, modes of nature, prakriti, and moved by time. And here's the list. The cause for which they work. The place where they work. The time when they work. The matter due to which they work. The goal of life they have considered final. And the process for obtaining this goal. So sambandha, abhideya, prayojana, everything. All are nothing but manifestations of your energy. Indeed, since the energy and energetic are identical, all of them are but manifestations of you. But now, here's how Prabhupada has taken that understanding and brought it to the house of bhakti. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Super Soul within the core of everyone's heart, gives inspirations for actions according to one's mentality. All of these mentalities are merely facilities given by Krishna to the person's acting. Because everyone has a different goal of life, everyone acts differently as guided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in his own words, Prabhupada is repeating what Prahlada is saying. Then there's material consciousness, where in material consciousness, in material life, we're following the attraction of the senses, and the mind is receiving those signals from the senses, and the material intelligence is figuring out a way to take care of it. As soon as we act according to the real transcendental direction of the Lord, our position is spiritual. So the senses then are directed towards and attracted to those things that are beneficial for bhakti. When one gives up materially designated positions, and works directly under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's spiritual life is revived. This is a definition of bhakti that we hear all the time. Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam, that one. Tat Paratvena Nirmalam. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. One's spiritual life is revived. This is described as, right from the purport, here is the phrase again, we've seen several times. This is the wrong version, but we'll, okay, it's spelled wrong. It's sva hyphen rupena, next word, vyavastati. Being situated in one's original constitutional position, this is the real description of mukti, or liberation from material bondage. So, remember that? We've said it three times, here's fourth time. It's repeated because it's important. One of the topics in Srimad Bhagavatam is liberation. Here, Prahlad is giving us a very clear picture of liberation, and liberation is beyond material cessation. No longer being allured by the senses and fruitive activities that bring objects to the senses for enjoyment. Beyond no longer being involved in those affairs, there's real liberation. Svarupena vyavastati. Again, spelled wrong. A nice example of this is in the first canto Bhagavatam, where chapter 6 of canto 1, Narada is describing to Vyasa his previous life, where he was a son of a maidservant, and he heard from the Bhakti Vedantas the ways of spiritual life. They left, his mother died, he was alone in the world, and he grew up practicing what he heard from the Bhaktivedantas. And as a result, he saw, and then he heard the personality of Godhead Vishnu. And the rest of his life, he was instructed, live your life like this for the rest of your life, and you will achieve spiritual perfection. We've heard those things. But he did. And Narada's description to Vyas is when he breathed his last, at that very instant, didn't say as lightning and thunder occur simultaneously, but as lightning and illumination. Because there may be a little delay, lightning and then... But lightning and illumination, as they occur simultaneously... When he left his body, Narada achieved his swarupa. So Bhagavatam is teaching us to this example, Narada, and now Prahlad. Same. Swarupena vyavastati, through the process of bhakti. Here is text 21. Mana is translated in the verse as the mind, but also, O Supreme Eternal, by expanding your plenary portion, you've created the subtle bodies. So, maya mana srijati. So, super soul creates, Lord Vishnu, of course, through the agency of Brahma, but he creates. He's the source of the material element of the mind. So he creates the subtle bodies of the living entities, agitated by time. Kalena chodita. Kalena chodita means agitated by time. Exactly as it's described in the third canto, the time energy of the living entities are injected into Pradhan, and the ad generates the subtle bodies, subtle elements. And within the mind, there's unlimited varieties of desires. Chandomayam. And how are you going to get free once you have desire, once the show starts? It doesn't end with death. And it doesn't end with restraining of the senses and the mind, because then again, the Bhagavatam teaches us, because of the influence of the modes of nature, again, the mind, like a bungee cord, it goes back to material desire. Even you may rise high, high, high through knowledge and yoga and so many things. It comes again to desire and acting upon desire. So what are you going to do? It's a Bhagavad Gita question. You can't do nothing. And as soon as you do something, you're bound. Damned if you don't and damned if you do, what do you do? Devotional service. That the message of chapter 3 is sacrifice, and sacrifice in the full sense is sacrifice to Vishnu. There's other types of sacrifice, but he's the bhokta of any sacrifice, Vedic principle. People just kind of like say it, but they block him out, and they really want Ganesh to help remove the obstacle to get what they want. And the bhokta of the yogi disappears, and the real self-interest disappears, and one becomes further implicated. In mode of goodness, fulfilling of desire, but furthering of desire, material desire. Bhakti eliminates the material desire. Bhakti eliminates the material mind, in which material desires take rest. That's the system. There's the elevation system, and there's the Swarupena Vyavastati system. Now, mentioned, could you fix this? I gave you that USB stick, no? Yes? Maybe I did. Maybe that's the problem. See if I left it on the table. Okay. Well, what's supposed to be showing now is a picture of time. It's a nice image. Time. So time is a topic that's being introduced because time agitates material nature and it brings about things. So a devotee has to be aware of the proper use of time, and with the proper use of time, what happens, and with improper use of time, what happens. An improper use of time is when it becomes entangled. Yes? No? No? Just carry on. At the very top, yeah, 20 through 25. One, back up one. Two. Okay. Okay. There's the time image. Okay. So, we need to manage our time. as devotees. We have busy lives. Time management is very important for devotees. Most important is we use our time, we invest time in things that are going to enhance bhakti, and we withdraw as far as realistic and possible things that are debilitators of bhakti. Now, we were discussing earlier about being in compromised situations where there's bad association or a toxic environment in the workplace or in school or in life, and how to protect ourselves. Now, this is more about using the time that we have in devotion to Krishna, even in those toxic situations. So, all the activities in both the spiritual and material world, this is the Abheda message, are certainly conducted by orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the agency of either the material or spiritual nature. So, if you're in the spiritual world, you're controlled by Krishna. If you're in the material world, you're controlled by Krishna, because we're controlled by Krishna. It's our position. We're marginal energy, and then the marginal is we can be controlled this way, that way. The problem that he's pointing out is being controlled by material nature, and that list was material nature conditions that we're controlled by. And since we're controlled by them, and they're crushing us because the time energy is moving them, we have a choice. We can take shelter of the spiritual potency. And when we take shelter of the spiritual potency, we enter into this realm of timelessness or eternal activity, or time as we know it is conspicuous by its absence, the crushing wheel of time. We're going to hear some more next verse too. So, Prabhupada writes, to enjoy material nature, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, created this material world and gave the living entity the facilities through the 16 kinds of support, perverted support. 16. That's 5, 5, 5, and 1. That's 16. 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, 5 working senses, 5 elements, and our dear friend, the mind. So, we heard previously that this same text 21, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his plenary portion, created minds. He created subtle bodies, and within the mind portion of the subtle body, there's unlimited desires that unregulated people try to fulfill in an unrestricted way. Regulated people try to fulfill in a karmakanda way, and I, Prahlad, want to get free altogether from the entanglement of the desires of the mind. Remember, this is the same topic, but how to go to the beyond material influence, go on, how to get into that zone where there's no more material contact, even we're in the material world. Nirvana, or enlightenment, or neutrality, or as we read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 20 through 23, samadhi. You know, Prahlad's already in samadhi, but how do I get to samadhi? How do I get to that stage of neutrality and then beyond neutrality into my spiritual identity? It's shelter of your lotus feet. That's what 21 is saying. So, we're now hearing there's these facilities given by the Personality of Godhead through his feature of time to give living entities this opportunity. And now comes this wheel of repeated birth and death that's created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the time and desire keeps us bound. But to direct the bewildered living entity in progress towards liberation, according to the varied stages of advancement, there's different directions. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and then the fifth dimension. You with me? Anybody unfamiliar with these? Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Christine, are you familiar with those? Okay. The Vedas teach these four things. Follow religiosity, Dharma, so that you can get things you want. Artha. Prosperity. Commonly, Artha in the world is translated as economic development. Artha. Do your Dharma so you can get prosperity. For what reason? Enjoy. Kama. Let's do it again. Dharma, be a, you know, don't just be a wanton person. Be a regulated person. Follow the Vedas so you can get prosperity, so you can get what you want and be an enjoyer in this life and after this life. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, chapter 2, most people say, there's nothing more than this. Well, there is something more than this. And there's something that's moksha. And there's something more than moksha. What's more than moksha? It's devotional service. More than moksha? More than moksha. Because this, we're going over it a number of times because it's important. Prahlad is doing it and Bhagavad Gita is doing it, so we're doing it. Many people think of moksha or liberation as what? Become one with the Supreme. And it's not just people from India. My dear devotees, in yoga classes, that's what they're learning. If they hear anything that's beyond, you know, make your body slim and trim and feel good, is to become one with the Supreme. And it's not a new thing. It's not even just an India thing. It's Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschyachadi. The Prabhupada Pranam mantra that he wrote, he came to deliver the Western countries that are filled with impersonalism and voidism. What's that? It's all one. Not just, you know, bogey yogi teachers, but, you know, people. I can give many examples, I'll just give one. Some time ago, on the topic of the realizations of Vyas, Canto 1, Chapter 7, that's the basis of the whole Bhagavatam. And one evening, it was a Wednesday evening, five yoga instructors came to the temple, Chicago Temple. Were you there for that? So, I was a little concerned. This is like an follow-it. So I tried to like make it really simple and not dumb it down, but, you know, it was very simply explained. And two of them, they said it in very straight, bold language. And one was a question, the other was a declaration, but I can't remember exact language used, but in the final analysis, you become one with God. These are American lady yoga tam one with God. They're coming to the temple because they have obviously some spiritual interest. But what's the goal of that spiritual interest? Become one with God. It's out there. And it's going to expand. For sure. Because it's attractive. Become God. Hey, that's why we came to the material world. We struggled a whole bunch, and now we just become yoga teachers and yogis and become one with God. We're doing it the wrong way. It's out there. It's very prominent. And it's not new, and I could give other examples. It's not just Mayavadi sannyasis. Western countries are filled with impersonalism and voidism. I could say a lot on that one, but The Vedas do give direction towards liberation according to varied stages of advancement, which includes dharma, these four, dharma, religiosity, to get economic development, to get sense gratification, towards liberation. But you have to get people to connect with the Vedas before you get them to, ready for liberation. So, rituals to get what you, prosperity to get what you want. In this life and after the next. And I'll say it again, Prabhupada says, or Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, people think that's all there is. Dharma, artha, kama, period. I've experimented. I've said this before. It, different audiences. Some in this country, some in India, some in universities, some in home gatherings. And just ask the open-ended question. And what Krishna says is true. Not just people from India, any audience. What's the goal of religious practice? Would you agree with the following? And the answer, you know, everyone's saying yes. Almost everyone, unless they've read Prabhupada's books. The goal of your religious practice is follow the codes given by God, for by so doing, you'll earn pious credits, and from earning those pious credits in this life, you will prosper, and in the next life, you'll attain a heavenly destination. How many would agree? And everyone says yes, unless they've read Prabhupada's books. Moksha is not even how most people think. What to speak of bhakti that's beyond moksha? But Prahlad is teaching it. The Bhagavatam is teaching it. Bhagavad Gita is teaching it. The fallen, conditioned living entity, entrapped by the external energy, loiters in the material world. But if by good fortune he meets a bona fide representative of the Lord who gives him the seed of devotional service, and if he takes advantage of such a guru or representative of God, he receives the bhakti lata bija. Bija means seed. Bhakti lata is the creeper of bhakti. There's the creeper of bhakti that takes one beyond dharma artha kama moksha. Prabhupada sometimes in his purports calls it the fifth dimension. It sounds mystical. Ooh. I know what three dimensions are, and then fourth dimension is beyond my comprehension, and fifth dimension, whoa. But he uses that language sometimes. If he properly cultivates Krishna consciousness, then gradually he is elevated to the spiritual world. Now, that's the teaching that Prahlad is giving, and he's requesting Lord Srinadev to give him that shelter of his lotus feet, to give him the teachings and the seed of, in practicing and cultivating further bhakti and getting beyond this crushing wheel of time or the crushing wheel of samsara. So here's the next verse. Look at that. He's got the right setting. Okay, so kala, we know what that one is. Time. Nishpidyamanam means being crushed. So Prahlad, remember, going beyond his material limitations, beyond his limitations because of birth and karma and so forth, going beyond the miseries, going beyond the modes of nature, going beyond ignorance, now going beyond time, beyond liberation. Beyond heaven, beyond liberation. There is his appeal. I surrender fully to you. He's speaking of these material creation, Visarga, Visarga Shakti, you know, Sarga and Visarga. So Sarga is what Vishnu does, Visarga is what Brahma does, and there are things that within this realm of Visarga Shakti, he wants to go beyond that. He says, Satvam, you are beyond that. You're beyond material qualities, beyond material creation. All those things are under your control. You're Ajita. You're never controlled by them. You're unconquerable. I want shelter of you. I want freedom from this crushing wheel of time. I surrender unto you. Kindly take me under the protection of your lotus feet. My dear Lord, O Supreme Great, you have created this material world of 16 constituents. We mentioned them in the previous verse. But you are transcendental to their material qualities. So now this is the abheda. Before it was beta. Excuse me. Before it was abheda, non-different. Now here's difference. You're different than these qualities, which are non-different than you. Simultaneously, you're different. In other words, these material qualities are under your full control, and you're never conquered by them. Therefore, the time element is your representation. Now, before it was non-different than you. Now it's different than you. And both are right at the same time. My Lord, O Supreme, no one can conquer you. Ajita again. As for me, however, I am being crushed by the wheel of time. And therefore, I surrender fully unto you because you're in that abode of timelessness beyond time. I take shelter of you. Kindly take me under the protection of your lotus feet. So, the statement in the verse is, time is your representation. Now, we know from Bhagavad Gita, the non-different message is in Bhagavad Gita chapter 10. Among subduers, I am time. Or, time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds. Oops. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11. Chapter 10, chapter 11. Time I am. So that's the non-difference. And Prahlad is saying, I'm being crushed by all of that. Every living entity in the material condition is actually being crushed again and again. Purport of this verse 21. To be saved from this position, one must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then one will be happy. So there's a reason, because you don't want to be crushed. But there's higher reasons. So why must we? There isn't an option. That's the message here. Prabhupada writes in this purport, when we give up our constitutional position, Jivair Swarupa, Hayan Krishna Nityadas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates his material energy and her influence over the conditioned soul. Therefore, he is the Supreme, and only he can deliver the conditioned soul from the onslaught of material nature. Because it's under his control. You can't do a workaround. Get out of the control of that which is under his control. You have to go to him. So therefore, the concluding message of this text 21, prapanam, unless one fully surrenders to the Supreme Lord, one cannot be saved from being crushed. Nice lessons, the way, just exactly as Prabhupada said in that little reference from the introduction to chapter 6, Prahlad was sent to this world by the Supreme Lord to teach the mode of spiritual activity. And this mode of spiritual activity is the same, prapanam, and with full knowledge as to why. And one may not even have full knowledge as to why, and just take full surrender. But that might be intermittent, surrender, not surrender, when it's convenient, I'll surrender, when it's not convenient, see you later, Krishna. So, the knowledge that supports bhakti, that arises from bhakti, keeps one fixed in devotional service. So we're hearing from Prahlad to come to that stage ourselves, being fixed in devotional service. Always remembering Krishna. Never forgetting Krishna. In any circumstance. However difficult. And we all have our experience of degrees of difficulty. Difficulty and degrees of difficulty. Temporary stretches of time when things are relatively less difficult, maybe even relatively pleasing. Prabhupada gives the example of a punishment that used to be used by kings. If somebody was to be punished, they would take them into the middle of a lake and the punisher person would hold the person underwater until they were practically, the lungs were bursting. And then they'd lift them by their hair out of the water, take a breath, and back down again. Hold them underwater until their lungs are nearly bursting, lift them out, and back down again. So, it's a extreme or maybe harsh way of describing material existence, but it's, when you compare, when anyone compares what the real happiness of the soul is and what we want when we're contemplating true happiness, it's not mixed with unhappiness. It's not the misery mixed in with the happiness. It's happiness that's without any boundaries and always increasing. That's the happiness that we hanker for. And it's natural to hanker for that because that's just natural for the soul. To have that happiness, but how to get it, because furry ones. And it causes us misery. But we're attached to those other ones. So how to become free from those other ones? Prahlad is teaching us through bhakti and the knowledge and detachment that arise from bhakti. The way of devotional service. We have some time for some. Where's the microphone? Right in the front here. Okay, we've got two. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. How do we convince a non-devotee who is seemingly very well situated in society that later in their life, they will be crushed, and that they need...
Generally speaking, such a person doesn't want to hear that message. But some pious people are ready to hear that message. They can look around and see everything is temporary. Sometimes it takes, you know, the school of hard knocks. I remember hearing from, you did the right thing. Because I've been living in a world of affluence and people that have everything and everything. And when this one got ill health, none of the money couldn't buy them wellness. And the other one got cheated. And the other one, you know, it's all taken away. There is no happiness there. You've done the right thing. But you know, it took the School of Hard Knocks to teach it. So by reason, whatever there is, it's limited and temporary. They're not aware of and not even looking for an alternative, something that's not limited or temporary. Although you could very reasonably say you want happiness that's not limited and not temporary, not mixed with unhappiness. But someone that's prospering, when somebody goes to Hawaii or Goa, they're not thinking, let's do some tapasya. Or somebody's at a party, and they want a party. So somebody that's in this situation of prosperity, the light's not on. The light of wisdom and illumination. It's enjoying the fruits of their past piety. That's what happens. Generally speaking, that's what happens in heavenly planets as well. Enjoyment. And so as pious activities exhaust, the pious bank account is gone, they have to come back and go to work. Reason and logic and good example and purity.
Maharaj, you were saying that when we take shelter of spiritual potent of timelessness. So I was thinking, is this experience of timelessness only after one becomes fully pure, or while practicing devotees, there could be moments of such an experience?
Well, listen to your language. Moments of timelessness. We get a glimpse, a reflection of the bhava of us, or timelessness of us. We get a reflection of what timelessness really is. A glimmer. A reflection. A shadow. Sometimes Prabhupada uses this expression. The curtain may open, the curtain of Maya, and then you see, and the curtain closes. Glimmer of. But so, yeah, kind of.
Okay. This is something new for me. This is the first time I've been here.
Uh-huh.
And I happen to see one of the slides mentions both the spiritual and the material, the Supreme God.
Yeah.
And, what if a terrorist or somebody kills somebody and say, well, this is also a materialistic thing which was done by God. Or,
Yes.
If there are bad things out there.
Not done by God, but sanctioned by God. Under his adyaksha.
Is it reasonable?
Huh?
How is it reasonable then?
I couldn't. How is it reasonable? That's your question?
Yes.
Are you a parent?
Yes.
Do your children sometimes ask you, Daddy, I want something that is not good for me? They don't say that. Can I have something? And your evaluation of that something is it's not good for you. And so you say no. I mean, they don't get that something that they want. And so they may look at you as, why are you depriving me of this something that I want? And then supposing they go and take one of those somethings anyways. And then you may have to hold your finger and scold them and say, this is not good. And then may have to get a little stronger. So they may say, Daddy, why are you being harsh with me? you know, supposing it's, you know, they're running across the street in rush hour traffic, and they could get squished. And so Daddy says you can't cross the street during that time of the day. But my friends are, you know, whatever it is they want. So you may restrict, and they may look at it as harsh and cruel, unfair and, you know, not nice. Well, you're Daddy, you're supposed to be nice. And take it further and further. Supposing somebody's a criminal. Supposing somebody's a whatever. Out of attraction, let's just take animal killing. Out of attraction for the tongue, the sensation of the tongue, I take the life of another living being. Now, that's not good. Now, what is the Supreme Lord going to do when you do something that you take the life of another living entity and do it regularly and regularly and regularly and regularly and regularly? And he says, don't do it, and you do it. There's a reaction for that. That's karma. Why is there suffering? It's not just karma, bad activity. Bad activity arises from bad desire. Bad desire arises from ignorance. The problem is ignorance. What do you do when somebody's ignorant? And they're doing ignorant, desired things. And they don't want to hear knowledge. You give knowledge and they, you know, it bounces. There's a police force. You put such people in jail. Etc. It's, you know, it's a similar, different, but similar to the question, a question yesterday about persons that are pacifists, and how do persons that are pacifists understand God does things that are, you know, bringing justice in the world, criminal justice, according to the laws of Manu, and then persons that administer justice. So, let's take one step back. You know, you're responding to your question, how is this fair? If the problem, some people reason this way, if the problem is I've misused my free will and I've done something that's reprehensible and therefore I'm getting this reaction for something that's reprehensible, God is all powerful. Why didn't he just take away our free will? Well, if you take away free will, there's no living entity, because living entity, part and parcel of God, has free will. And if you have no free will, there's no love. But in the spiritual world, there's love, which means there's free will. There's free will to say no. And that is our natural condition, is a loving condition where you can say yes or no, and you're saying yes. But if you say no, then there's a position for those that say no. And that built into the system is the house of correction, not just the house of punishment. To correct that tendency to say no to love and harmony with the will of the Supreme. That's the reason. Is it reasonable? If you're going to have love, you're going to have a living entity that has love as their nature, there has to be free will. To say no. And then the rest flows. And for those that say no, to a degree, they can say no. And when it's premeditated murder, just this morning I was thinking about this, because I know of a situation where there was a quarrel between husband and wife. The husband premeditatedly bought a gun, months later made a plan to kill his wife and his daughter, somebody I know, and he fled. And the police found him in, you know, so many states away, and there was just a routine check, and the man thought that they caught him, and he jumped out of his gun and pulled his gun, and the police shot him dead. Now, had there been a trial, it would have been first-degree murder. It was premeditated, planned murder of his wife and daughter. That's altogether different than accidental death. So, and there's degrees of punishment, because there's degrees of crime, even in the secular world, what to speak of in God's law. So, should there be justice in the universe, or no? Yes. And there's the measure for taking care, and the purpose of it is not just punishment, but correction. And ultimately, the correction is misuse of free will, turning free will back to the Supreme. That's the purpose behind the whole thing. Whether it's Dharma, and those that are adharmic, what is the consequences for adharmic life? Rebellion against the natural order of harmony and tranquility in the universe, authored by the Creator and His representative Manu, the givers of law for mankind, supposing people just ignore that and you do whatever the heck they want. You have to check those people. Is it fair? Which is your question?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the same scenario, if the kids of the died one, why are they suffering?
Trace it back and back. And it's not like a happy answer. But the answer is there's misuse of free will. Could you just move a little bit this way so there's... There we go. Thank you. Now the other way. In the white. Could you lean?
Okay. I can move.
Ah, there we go. Now it's eye contact. Fantastic. So, now, are we okay? Or do you want to keep going with this?
No, I mean, I have another question.
Okay.
You know, while you were explaining about the scenario, you used another analogy. So, killing animal is bad. You know, do you consider a plant a life?
Yes.
So we are killing life to sustain our lives?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. That's, for example, wheat.
Wheat is a seed.
Wheat is harvested after the plant dies. It turns brown. You're not taking the plant of the life of the wheat plant. Now, let's take it one step further. Yes, life inside the wheat kernel, there's life. You can take the wheat kernel and it's going to grow something because there's life inside.
Yes.
But it's less suffering if you harvest the wheat and you just take the grain, then inside there's life, and you chop an animal. So, do we live our lives as devotees? Do we live our lives in such a way that lives of others are being sacrificed for our existence? Yes. We drink water. We breathe. We walk. We have bodies that exist, and living entities are sacrificing their lives for our existence. Yes? That's your point. Now, do we make distinctions between degrees of sacrifice of lives of others? Yes. Take your logic to the full extent, and why not be cannibals? Well, we're not going to eat people. Why not? If you're going to take life anyways in a plant, then be a cannibal. Anything goes because anything goes. We make distinctions. And according to laws of Manu, there's proper ways to make distinctions. So therefore, as devotees, we take only those foods which we can offer to Krishna, grain, fruits, vegetables, not taking the life of the plant necessarily, like the tomato plant or the apple from the apple. We don't kill the apple tree, but there's seeds inside the apple. So we offer the apple to Krishna. Foods that are acceptable by Krishna, foods in the quality of goodness, there's life, and we're offering to Krishna. And the living entity that sacrificed his life that's offerable to Krishna gets spiritual benefit. And because it's offered to Krishna, we receive spiritual benefit. Are we taking life of the plant? In degrees, yes, but it's a lesser degree than chopping an animal or killing a human. So if I can live just thinking moralistically, aside from spiritually, if I can live my life in such a way that other living entities suffer less by my existence, is that a better way to live? This is ahimsa argument. Yes, it's better. Less suffering for others at my expense is better.
Well, it may not
so
be...
So is there less suffering or greater suffering for the plant compared to the animal? Now, some people say, who knows? But scriptures say there's less suffering.
Maybe.
Consciousness is less developed. Now, when we could back and forth argue, who knows? Okay. Someone else had their hand up. I saw some hands up. Okay, right up front here. Right up front, this young devotee.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So my question is it possible, for a pure devotee, is it possible to be in timeless?
Absolutely. In the world, but not of the world. Like, take a pure devotee. Take take Prahlad Maharaj. He was in the world, but his consciousness was otherworldly. I'll tell a little Prabhupada story. I like it. Prabhupada was visiting Los Angeles, and he had arrived at the airport and had come to the temples, take darshan of the deities, gone to his quarters, and the devotees were crowded into his little quarters. In Los Angeles, they're not, it's very small, the space for Prabhupada's quarters. Now, Prabhupada was looking around the room, and everyone was in this exhilarated, happy mood. And Prabhupada said, I know that you're always asking about what is Swamiji doing? Now he's in India, and he's doing these things. And then Swamiji went to Japan, and he did these things. And then he went to Australia and New Zealand, and he spoke to these people and did these things. And then he went to Hawaii, and very soon he'll be coming to Los Angeles. I know you speak like that all the time, but I want you to know, actually, I'm always with Krishna. In the world, but of the spiritual world. Engaging in activities, in the case of Srila Prabhupada, engaging in activities for the benefit of conditioned souls, you give as association and give teachings of Krishna and Krishna bhakti and everything. But in his heart of hearts or in his spiritual realities with Krishna. Please know I'm always with Krishna. So is it possible? Yes. One may function in practical terms, in terms of time and space and circumstance. Consciousness-wise, always with Krishna. Okay. Yes, over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. The time boundness.
The time?
Time bounding.
To binding, the, bound by the wheel of time.
Binding. This Prahlad Maharaj is also saying that, like, I'm being crushed by the time. And, I read the stories that, like, he's unaffected by anything because he's completely with the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
And he himself saying that he's been crushed by the time.
Yes. I mentioned it at the beginning. Do you remember? I said, it was actually this morning's class, I said, he is going to say things as if he's a conditioned soul for our benefit. It's partly his humility and it's partly for our benefit. Just like Prabhupada commented in the purport, where earlier verse, I've taken birth in demoniac family due to my past karma. Now, when one becomes a pure devotee, there's no influence of past karma. Gone.
Yes.
But he's speaking that way.
Thank you, Maharaj. Yeah. I missed that point.
As if he's one of us. But he's not. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
I have a question. Okay, I've got two mics. Go ahead, speak. It's a little bewildering that in the spiritual world there is no phenomenon of time, at least to me, because we hear that Krishna performs pastimes with his devotees.
There's a very wonderful transcendental answer to that that Jiva Goswami gives. Here we go. There is no time. There's timelessness. But by the influence of Yoga Maya, it seems as if, it feels as if there's the passage of time to enhance Krishna's pastimes. There's day and night because it helps Krishna's pastimes. It nourishes Krishna's pastimes. There's the Ashtakaliya Lila, the eight features of time in Krishna's day and different pastimes during different times of day. But there's no time. It's the influence of the yoga maya potency or the internal potency. There's other things. There's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or electricity. We know that from Bhagavad Gita. But there's sun and there's moon. There's day and there's night. The sun rises and sets, and there's moon for Krishna's pastimes. But the moon, Jiva Goswami explained, the moon in Krishna Loka, it's always the full moon. There's no phases of the moon, no codices. It's always the full moon for Krishna's pastimes. Everything is there for Krishna's pastimes, but not according to the material rule of time and other features. Like, you know, you weren't here at the very beginning, but anger and dvesha in its pure form exists in Krishna. Because everything is within Krishna, and everything within Krishna is in its pure form. And then there's the reflection of that in this realm. Time as we know it, past, present, and future. The spiritual world, no past, present, internal. What does it mean, eternal past time? Past time, by the very language, is time passes. You can't go from here to there without passage of time, but Krishna can. And there's the seeming passive time, passage of time. Like an example, in the Kaliya pastime, you know how far Kaliya God is from Nandagram? Go by car. Even if there's no traffic, how long does it take by car? It takes quite some time. So, in the morning, Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, and one of the cowherd boys goes back to inform Nanda and Yashoda, Krishna's in the coils of Kaliya. And then they come. You know, how long did that take? But he said, they can move quickly for the sake of Krishna's pastimes. Or it can take a long time. When Akura was going from Vrindavan to Mathura, it took the whole day. He left at dawn, and he didn't get there till nearly dusk. And he had a fast chariot. It wasn't, you know, donkeys or bullock cart. It was like a special chariot. Took him all day. And our acharyas say because he was so much absorbed in thought of Krishna, he didn't even know where he was. He was just going here and there. And Krishna's influence of his pastimes, he wanted Nanda Maharaj to get there when he got there, so he was going by bullock carts, and so it took a long time. Time acts according to Krishna's pleasure in the spiritual world. Time, eternal time. That's the answer. By Yoga Maya. So I guess like really convenient. Oh, something we don't understand. Yoga Maya. But this is now from our acharyas explaining. For sake of Krishna's pastimes, Yoga Maya is moving things. That's the spiritual energy. And then there's the material energy that's moved by time as we know it. Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. My question is related to yesterday's afternoon class.
Yesterday's class.
Yeah. This is about this point of material exhaustion.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that I am hearing from today's session also, that what Prahlad Maharaj is exhibiting is that quality of there is no hopes in the material efforts.
Yes. He becomes king at the order of Nrisingadev to become king for a long time, the whole duration of a life of Manu. Same as happened to Dhruva. But he has no anticipation of being the enjoyer of that. He's doing it in service. So now go ahead.
So, one of the things that I was seeing, that these two process of elevation system or elevation method, where we try to elevate our consciousness by different methods, we are still hoping or holding on to that material hope that we can elevate ourselves. On the other hand, what Prahlad Maharaj is teaching is the descending method and exclusive dependence on that descending mercy of the Lord.
Yes.
And so my understanding is that many a time this dilemma of putting the horse in the cart thing, that becoming anatta conscious rather than Krishna conscious, because on the way, because the hopes are still bound in the material, I still have hopes in my own capacities. I lose track of the mercy, and even in devotional service, the primary focus is not pleasing Krishna, but purification or becoming elevated.
Well, we're fruitive. This middle planetary system, upper, middle, and lower, this middle planetary system, the Earth is in the middle planetary system, it's characterized by rajas. Madhye tishtanti rajasa. It's a place of fruitive activities. So even when we take up devotional service, we carry that mentality, fruitive activity. I want to get a result. And what's an activity that doesn't have a result? And we're not, they all have a result, but what's the result that we're looking for is something that comes to me, and that's the paradigm, that's the territory that we're familiar with, accustomed to, attach to, and we think that way. And it's not easy to, like tar on your hand. How do you get rid of the tar that's on your hand? Rub your other hand, and now you have tar in both hands. Then go away so easily. Your question is right on target with this topic, because he's approaching this from multiple angles. My shortcomings, the modes of nature, my karma, misery, crushing wheel of time. Now he's really clear. The predicament of the conditioned soul. And he's not even a conditioned soul. But his focus is exclusive bhakti. We're not there yet, just like someone else was saying. We may know the goal, and we're not there yet. So be honest with where we are and move towards the goal. Be clear what the goal is, move towards the goal in increments. But if we're going to be lazy, we're going to stay fruitive. And measure everything by those kinds of yardsticks instead of the bhakti yardsticks, becoming attached to Krishna and pleasing Krishna. That's the yardstick. That's the bhakti yardstick. Anukulyena. Krishna should be pleased. Accepting that which is for the pleasure of Krishna. We're accepting things because we get some Krishna points or something. It's not. Beginning devotional service, everyone can participate. And not everyone wants to go beyond beginning. And those that want to go beyond beginning will understand there's brahminical. Anyone that's tried seriously, chanting attentively, knows can't do this on my own. I mean, anyway, and what to speak of a sustained effort to try to do so. I can't do this on my own. I need help. And so then comes the help, calling, crying. Now, Krishna hears, but Krishna may not respond in a way that we're expecting Krishna is going to respond, because he's supposed to do according to our plan. That's our fruitive. Anyway, it takes patience and perseverance, faith, using your phrase, a continuing series of refinements, and we understand the goal to be, and what our experience of that path of reaching the goal. So that's bhakti. That's the responsible bhakta. And it takes time. It takes, I call it brahminical work, or devotee work, internal work, internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So you're pointing out one of so many different subtleties. Stay with it and keep refining it. One over here, and then Dvaita Chandra. I think we're going to end and have the drama. Are the kids ready with the drama? Tomorrow. Oh, I'm disappointed. Okay, tomorrow. Yes.
Maharaj, you showed in one of the slides very quickly about the life of Narad Muni, that
yes.
He heard from Bhakti Vedantas. And so when observing the lives of such devotees, it felt like, there was few events that happened, he heard, and there was one where he lost his mother. And probably from that time onwards, he was, already a pure devotee, and there was only difference of time when he would achieve his Swarup.
Not exactly. When Lord Vishnu appeared, he was in meditation. Lord Vishnu appeared before him. He was startled. Lord Vishnu disappeared. And then he heard his voice and said, normally I don't appear before someone who's not perfect, but to encourage you, I've appeared. Please continue for the rest of your life this way. But he wasn't already pure. He was being encouraged. So Krishna can, Vishnu can encourage anybody he wants, however he wants. But keep going.
Yeah, so probably I lack to grasp these subtle points, like one that she's making, the struggles. We at least what I observe is a very quick transition from impure to pure, but in my life, I see there's a whole journey, there's so many
events. Yes, yes.
How do we process those in light of...
Talk to her, she's working on it. You stay with it. Brahminical work. You can't continue to monitor and continue to refine even your sense of what the goal is. I mean, as a new devotee, what would your sense of the goal compare to your sense of the goal today? And, in 10 years from now, if you continue with the process, it'll be further refined. And then how are you aligned to that goal, further refined? If one is complacent, I got my miseries, the worst of those miseries, I got new ones, but the worst ones are behind me, and so I'm relaxed now. I'm in this complacent zone. That's not going to work. There has to be a desire, awakened desire, like Prahlad, to take shelter. Now, he has his multiple perspectives and reasons through knowledge awakened through bhakti and Narada's association as to why. And each one of us, a little differently, because we're who we are. We're a little different. It's the continual application of the bhakti principle will carry us to that stage, and it's gradual, generally speaking, not suddenly. That's Prabhupada's teaching, and it's also reality.
Thank you much.
Guru Maharaj, thank you again for these opportunities. One of the inspiring things about Prahlad Maharaj's character is how he is responding to very, very unfair treatments. But on the other hand, we have Lord Narsingadev, who is manifesting transcendental justice to someone who is not even necessarily seeking justice, like in the case of Prahlad Maharaj. So, now if I think about our lives as practicing devotees or even people in general, there's always these attempts to seek fairness and justice.
And if we don't get it?
If we don't get it, it's very frustrating.
We make some noise.
We make some noise either with the guru or authorities. Or, you know, it creates a lot of unpleasant things. So, what do I learn from this example of Prahlad Maharaj, but also Narsingadev, both combined? How do we seek fairness and justice? It seems like it's important, and at our stage we cannot ignore.
Well, having just come from Ayodhya, and having spent hundreds of hours with the different personalities who are viewing the injustice in their own way, 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 in multiple ways of viewing, there's not one way. I mean, that's clear. These are exalted personalities. These are, in the case of the brothers, they're Lord Vishnu and his expansions, and they each have their own way of viewing justice. And then the others, they're eternal. So, how do, the question, just taking that context, there's lots of ways to view it and lots of ways of responding when they see it's not just. There's not one way to see it, is what I'm saying in response. And having that understanding, supposing I'm Vishnu Das and I'm having my sense of what is just and unjust, let me look at my sense of just and unjust through the lens of the injustice done to Ram and Sita and Dasarath and the whole of Ayodhya. You know, that such a person who is seeking justice should allow there's lots of ways of viewing it, not just my own. And ultimately, in the lives of this person wishing to see justice, having faith in Krishna, justice will be done in the end. If I lose faith in Krishna and say justice isn't being done, then I've got a problem, because ultimately I'm blaming Krishna. Although I may be blaming someone else, I'm blaming Krishna. So that doesn't mean now I sit back and just throw my hands in the air and say, que sera, sera. I may take some action according to my sense, but you know, at the same time, you know, so advice to such a person is allow there's multiple perceptions of justice. Act in such a way that I'm not pretending to be the controller and the decider of justice. Krishna is. I'll take my position of service, and in the position of servant of Krishna, act and speak accordingly. But at the same time, being flexible that Krishna's plan for justice is meant to prevail beyond my own little part in this. There's a grander scheme that I don't have the capacity to understand. But I have my... So, flexibility, acting in the mood of service, and ultimately everything rests upon Krishna, like life in general, besides the factor of justice. Another way of responding to your question is similar to Chupra's question, and then this follow-up question to her question. Let such a person, encourage such a person to look in Bhakti Siddhanta, look inside and make one's own heart just or worthy of being inspired by Krishna to the path of justice and then the right way of pleasing Krishna towards that. Not the reactive, but the pleasing Krishna mode. One of the the very first passage in the Bhagavatam, I find it significant that after the first three chapters, which is a summary of the whole Bhagavatam, and then the next three chapters, which is how does the Bhagavatam appear, and then the meditation of Vyas, which is the essence of the entire rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the message is then hearing Krishna Katha. So Shaunaka says, Krishna Katha, please. And the first Krishna Katha is a justice question. And it's about the Pandavas and what's to be done with Ashwatthama. And one of the conclusions of that is Krishna wanted to show, just see how dear Arjuna is to me because he understands what I want, even if I'm saying something else. Now that's a really qualified person. Krishna says kill him, and Arjuna doesn't, in the normal sense of kill him, but in essence kill him by, for one who has once been honored, dishonor is worse than death. And that same Ashwatthama, according to the Puranas, lives a whole duration of yoga cycles and becomes the next Vyas. So there's a higher purpose for service for Ashwatthama, and he's not killed in the way that we normally think justice should be done. I mean, murdering, according to laws of Manu, is to be, justice is for the sake of that person. They're killed so they don't have to suffer the reaction of murder. What to speak of the way that he did what he did. Five children in their sleep, the sons of the dear associates of Krishna. Heinous. Death penalty. No question about it. According to the laws of Manu. Anyway, how is justice to be done? Not easy. You know, people had their opinion. When Vibhishan wanted to take shelter of Ram, they had their opinion. Different opinions. But basically, don't trust him. Test him, examine him, and this and that. Not easy. Different opinions. So to help such a person who feels justice should be done is not being done, rah, 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 rah. I'm going to go blast people on the internet or whatever behavior shows one's frustration that justice isn't being done when one doesn't necessarily understand the whole picture, what to speak of what Krishna wants. Life of responsibility. Okay, we'll end there. And did you bring the Mahaprasada? I brought some. I have enough to go around this time instead of miserly little breaking things in half. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.